Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast, the official source of audio accounts for the Near Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm Chaz Hathaway, author of Life in the Spirit World, What Near-Death Experiences May Teach About Life on the Other Side. Today we're going to share an experience that is classified on NDERF.org as a NDE-like experience. You might also call it a near-death experience dream or something to that effect. We'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute. But here we go. This is Greg, and he says, "This happened to me back in 2003, and I still remember this as vividly as the day it happened. On the night in question, I went to bed, it being like any other ordinary night. I remember waking up, as it were, only to find myself in complete darkness, which I call the void. This was no dream because I just knew it was real. My senses worked perfectly, and I had complete clarity of thought. It was more real than my sitting here and typing this. The feeling I had was of complete contentedness and an overwhelming peace. I tried to peer through the darkness, but no matter how much I strained to look in any direction, it was completely impenetrable. After I gave up trying to see something, I just stared around in wonder. Then a thought popped into my head. Oh, I must be dead. Oh well." I was rather nonchalant about it. I sat there between moments and minutes. I really couldn't tell. Time didn't really seem to exist. All was silent, and I was actually quite content to sit there forever. I was very curious about my new situation and thought nothing odd about it. I had no sense of even having a body. I just was. There was no temperature, no sound, and no nothing. I couldn't move even if I wanted to. I didn't know how, and even if I did, there was nowhere to go. After a few moments of this, I thought to myself, "Where's God in all of this?" At the very moment I thought that, a pinprick of bright golden light suddenly appeared on my right side, far off in the distance. At first, I wasn't sure what I was seeing. Then the light vanished after a split second and suddenly reappeared. This time, it was a tiny bit closer. It kept doing this, vanishing and getting closer and closer with each appearance. Each time it did this, there was a strange sound, like a far-off thunderclap. Only it wasn't thunder. I can't really describe it. Right after the first two or three pulses, the thought came to my mind, "Oh, that must be the tunnel. God is at the end of that. I have to concentrate on it, or I might be stuck here forever." So I intently concentrated. I also had the odd thought, "Don't think of anything bad." I was worried that I would slip up and do that in front of Him. Now that I've thought about it, it was kind of silly for me to say that to myself, since He knows everything already. Once the light engulfed me completely, I flew through the tunnel. It was quite fast at first. Then I wondered if I could slow down. So I thought, slower. Then, faster. As I thought this, it happened. As an aside, the walls of the tunnel were streaked with blue rays when I would look at it. Mostly, I was looking up, if you can call it that. When I looked up, it looked like I was inside a pitch-black tornado. The walls twisted around themselves as I moved through it until I saw a super bright pinprick of light appear at the end. This kept getting brighter and brighter until I finally reached the top of the tunnel. I recall stopping at the top of the tunnel and floating towards an open opening or portal. The strange feeling came over me that told me that I had arrived. Behind me was the top of the tunnel. In front of me was a demarcation point consisting of a bright blue sky with swirling white clouds around it. In the very center, I saw a massive ball of light of indescribable brightness. I knew immediately this was God. Although I'm using words like in front and behind, they're really meaningless, as my vision had expanded to 360 degrees. I would look behind me to focus on the mouth of the tunnel, which was swirling and darker than even the blackness surrounding it. I was acutely aware of that. However, I wasn't actually turning my head to look at this, since I didn't have a head, much less a body. I had a simultaneous view of all angles. I was also more aware of myself than when I was in the void. I now perceived myself as a puffball of energy, although I was completely formless. I felt completely drawn to him. I felt such longing to be with him that I wanted to merge immediately. This time I could move with a mere effort of will. Wherever I wanted to go, I would instantly be there. The problem was that when I tried to approach God, I was immediately blocked by an unseen force. I can't even describe the way I was stopped. I didn't bump into any force, wall, or anything. I would just be firmly but gently halted right where the beginning of the blue sky started. I was neither disappointed nor angry, just intensely curious. After trying to get through the barrier twice more and failing, I noticed the very tall silhouette of a man entering my field of vision on my right side and taking a place between God and myself. He was unmistakably Jesus. With later reflection, I wonder if it was either my guide or God presenting that form to me, to give me something with a human aspect to grasp onto that I would be comfortable with. I was reared with a Catholic background, so this makes sense to me. He had no features, but was filled with an amazing blue radiance, a deep blue radiance. It was a very captivating sight, but I still wanted to merge with the light. I even remember being slightly put off that he was blocking my vision of the light and thinking that if he would just move over a bit, I could see the brightness again. He apparently heard me because he moved over just enough to give me a quick glimpse. Then he moved back again. I tried four more times to zoom directly through him and directly into the blue sky. The same barrier blocked me at every attempt. There was no way I was going to be allowed to pass. I can only assume it wasn't my time. I finally gave up and backed off enough to sit there and have a staring contest with him, with neither of us addressing the other. The only thought that kept coming into my mind was, I wonder why he's not saying anything. I just sat there, waiting for him to say something. It never happened. Regardless of this, I was still overwhelmed with peace and super curious as everything was going on. I never felt any infinite love nor knowledge being transferred to me in any way. I guess that wasn't on the menu. After about a minute of this staring contest, I found myself backing away from the light and towards the top of the tunnel. I tried to stay, but it was clear that I was being gently directed back towards the tunnel, whether I liked it or not. Before I realized it, I was being rocketed back down the tunnel at the same speed as before. The light grew smaller and smaller until only a crack of it remained. I tried to keep it in my field of vision, but it vanished after that. After I reached the bottom of the tunnel, I ended up being dumped into a normal, earthly dream. After I woke up, I found the aspects of my regular dream to be fading quickly, as I would expect. My journey to God, on the other hand, left me with complete recollection. There's not one detail that I cannot remember, even to this day. After thinking about it, I assume I was in the void for the purpose of giving me the choice to either ask for God or to return to the world. It occurs to me now that whichever scenario I picked would have been honored. That is the end of Greg's experience. And I have to admit, just on that last note, on that last line, I'm not sure if he's correct on, he was saying that he was given the choice, he thinks he was given the choice to either ask for God or to return to the world. And he realizes that whatever scenario he picked would have been honored. I'm not completely convinced of that. As so many people have chosen and shouted and asked and begged and decided and chosen to stay, but were forced back anyway. It could be that there needs to be the illusion of the choice, the feeling that they're choosing it for themselves so that they don't feel betrayed or, you know, something like that. It's like when we try to convince a child that, you know, we really need to come inside as it's getting dark. The child is going to be made to be brought inside, whether they want to or not. But we try to convince them, and we get them to choose it for themselves. And yet, if they don't choose it, we end up picking them up and bringing them in, you know, because either it's bedtime or it's dark or whatever. And I wonder if that's kind of what's happening in a lot of these cases. And yet, maybe not. Maybe people are given the choice, and that the choice is going to be very difficult to be able to stay, but that it can be made in some way. I don't know. I just find that interesting. So the first unique thing that I find about this that is uncommon and yet seems to be the case is that this really, really appears to be a near-death experience, and yet there was nothing of death about it. It was sleeping at night. It was just an ordinary night, he says. He says, I remember waking up, as it were, and finding himself in complete darkness, which I call the void. Now, I'm suspecting from the terms that he's using throughout this that he's later studied near-death experiences and found such similarities that he used the terms that are the similar terms, such as void and so forth. But regardless, it's a perfect description of the void of light. It's a little bit unique how the light is appearing and then with a boom, either appearing with a boom or disappearing with a boom, I'm not sure, some kind of crack or thunder-like thing or far-off thunderclap. But it's appearing and then disappearing. And every time it reappears, it's a little bit closer. And it just seems to flash on, flash off, flash on, flash off, until it engulfs him. And that is the only thing that I see as, oh, that's unique. I haven't heard that before in terms of a near-death experience. But, I mean, that's a small difference compared to some of the other differences that we find. But he finds himself at a barrier. And this barrier, I find interesting, that there isn't, it's not something he can feel or touch or, you know, influence in any way. He just can't cross this point. It's just, no matter how much he tries, he's not able to get past that point. It's almost as if, you know, it's hard to say what's causing this or what exactly the sensation is like. But needless to say, there's this barrier and he can't get to this being that he considers as being God. It's interesting also that he says that this person that comes and stands between, he says, unmistakably Jesus. And then later he describes the sense of, or this idea that maybe this was the form that my guide or whatever took on so that it would be familiar to me and comfortable to me. And I find this an interesting comment because clearly if it's appearing as Jesus, but is not Jesus, it's a deception. At least in my understanding of what is a deception, that's a deception. And yet deception does not seem to be possible in this kind of setting. So is it that Jesus really is there in every one of these situations where somebody understands it to be Jesus? Or is it that that there is more to this than deception versus, you know, truth? Is there more to it? Is it they're taking on that form in all honesty in some way, although it's not him? Or maybe, I don't know. See, what can we make of that? I'm a little bit hesitant to suggest that spirits on the other side, flowing out with love and truth and so forth, would be able to take on the appearance and everything, you know, the countenance of Jesus and not be him. I have a hard time accepting that, but mostly because I've just not seen enough evidence for it in near-death experiences. If there was enough, if there was many people, enough people saying that, they felt like it was somebody else taking on that form, then I would have to at least consider that as a possibility. It's just hard to accept that when everything seems so non-deceptive, inability to hide facts, if you will, or to present something in a way that's not completely accurate. It does appear that there are ways of withholding information, but I don't know that the disguising yourself as somebody else is something that can be easily gotten away with. Not that it's not tried, especially by lesser vibration, you know, evil spirits, whatever you want to call them, because they do that. Sometimes they'll take on the form of a father or a grandmother or whatever, and it becomes quickly obvious that something is amiss here, and they figure out that that's not really them. It's somebody else taking on their form. And so there is the possibility of taking on different form. We know that. There's also the possibility of attempted deception. But to the sensitive spirit, they can sense that something is amiss here. It's not who they claim to be. At least that seems to be the case. So I find that kind of interesting and worth noting. Another thing worth mentioning, and I probably should have mentioned earlier on because it's earlier on in the account, is his description of his own being. He talks about there not being a body. He had a 360-degree view, and saying that he looked behind him and turned this way and so forth. He says, I just don't know how else to put it. And I think, as I hear other experiences, if I'm understanding him right, I think that's just a way of saying I put my focus toward the tunnel, and then I put my focus back toward the man. It's not that anything, you know, slid in and out of view by his turning, so to speak, but rather that he was putting his focus towards that thing and different things that he's noticing. And not having a discernible body, he says, I now perceived myself as a puffball of energy, although I was completely formless. In a later question and answer thing, he describes the being, I assume the being referred to as God, was huge, just massive. And I've heard this from many other near-death experiencers, that the beings are gigantic. And that leaves me to wonder, what if this non-spirit body form, this conscious intelligence form, is considerably smaller than the spirit? Let's face it, if you were suddenly the size of an ant, I don't think that you would feel tiny. I think you would feel roughly the same size, and it would seem as if the world around you was much bigger. And in a place like heaven, where, you know, you're looking at blue sky and trees and whatever else, I mean, are these huge trees, or are you just small? Or maybe they are small trees also. I don't know. You know, this is all stuff we have to conjecture because we don't have all the answers. But I find it interesting that in this form, completely formless, as he puts it, puffball of energy, he is seeing God as massive. I think the term he uses 100 times his size. Does that mean that his now perceived form was 100 times smaller? I don't know. I think that might be a bit of a stretch to suggest that, but there's just so much we don't know about these things. And I am of the opinion that probably in that form, a normal mortal human being would probably look bigger than they seem to us now, simply because we see things based on our context. You know, if you're a 6 foot tall guy, you measure everybody up based on your height, relative to your height. If you're a 4 foot tall person or child or whatever, somebody who's 6 foot tall looks huge. But to a 6 foot tall person, they look like an equal. To them, also a 7 foot six person looks huge. And to them, everybody else looks smaller. It's not that they seem smaller in personality or anything like that. They just appear smaller. I remember that change as I grew from a shrimpy little guy to being 6 foot tall. I'm now 6 foot one, but in my junior high years is when I went from about, I can only guess where I started, 5 foot tall maybe, to 6 foot tall in those 3 years. I could be wrong about the, you know, but it's somewhere around that. And I remember noticing things so abruptly sometimes. A friend would be gone for 6 months, and when they got back, I'm like, you're smaller than you used to be. You look smaller. Yet they've grown too, just not as much as I have. And I would notice this, and it makes me think that whatever size you are seems like the correct, normal, everyday size of a person or entity. And so anything bigger will look like a big one, and anything smaller will look like a small one. That seems practical to me. I don't know. That's just a thought. My own ideas about things. But I should add, regarding this energy form, if you can call it, that also seems to be the form that people are in when they have this sense of expanding larger or engulfing the world around them. They'll feel like they're expanding. They say it's kind of like upward, but it's really more like just outward in all directions. And how do you describe the sensation of that other than saying getting bigger or taller or higher or rising up? And some people suggest, that's why it feels like we're flying up from the earth, because we're expanding out into the earth. But I think that's not a fair thing to say, because some people genuinely feel themselves as a spirit body flying up and then zooming over this way and then landing over here and going in and out of, or going, you know, in and out of places and so forth. And they're not having a sense of expanding necessarily, but actual flying travel. And so it's not fair to say that, oh, that's what they're really experiencing, is that. And it's not fair for somebody who experiences that to say, oh, well, when they're expanding like that, what they're probably really experiencing is flying or whatever. That's not fair. The fact is, it seems that there's both possible. And one takes one in, or takes place in one form, and one takes place in the other form. And whether Greg here had any experience in the spirit body form, it doesn't seem clear. In fact, it seems apparent that he never did experience the spirit body form. I could be wrong. Again, we're only going off what the account says, and we have to assume a lot, or at least not assume what we don't see. So I can't assume that he was ever in the spirit body form, but rather that he probably remained in the energy form throughout the experience. Now, one of the things interesting about this that we did discuss this a little bit, is that this is an experience that is during the night in a dream. I mean, in a totally, just, you know, we all experience sleeping at night, and that is where he was when he was propelled into this near-death experience that was nowhere near death from what we can tell. And then he even says that after he is rushed back to his body, how does he put it? He says that after about a, let's see, okay, they, I tried to keep in the field of vision, but it vanished after that as he's rushing down this tunnel, okay. Only a crack of the of that light remained. He said, I tried to keep it in my field of vision, but it vanished after that. After I reached the bottom of the tunnel, I ended up being dumped into a normal earthly dream. Now, some people would want to know, well, what'd you dream after that? But honestly, I don't think it makes a difference. We've all had, well, those of us that have had deeply meaningful dreams have found that sometimes after the meaningful dream, it goes into some stupid, unrelated thing. You know, suddenly you're in the show that you watched last night or whatever. And so him being dumped back into a normal earthly dream, I think, is an understandable situation, especially since he is healthy. He doesn't seem to be in any danger at all. But he says, after I woke up, I found the aspects of my regular dream to be fading quickly, as I would expect. My journey to God, on the other hand, left me with complete recollection. There's not one detail that I cannot remember, even to this day. And I should say that this was just posted on the website yesterday, and it took place in 2003. So between 2003 and now, being 2019, April 25th for me, there is no drop in memory. It hasn't faded at all, which is very characteristic of a near-death experience, but it is not characteristic of a dream. Dreams can twist and bend over time. I've had dreams that I had as a kid that I talked to my siblings and they're like, wait, I thought I was the one that had that dream. And there's confusion because we've reshaped our memories. And to this day, I don't know who had the dream of a giant spider chasing me in the backyard. I don't know if it was me or if it was my sister that described it. And I just visualized it so well that I actually remember it. I can't say, you know, and the details that we can both give are quite interesting, albeit slightly different. Just only slightly different, though. Anyway, point is, with near-death experiences, they tend to be very, I mean, memory is perfect of them, for the most part. When the memory comes, some people don't remember for a while, but then when they do, it comes in a big way. Anyway, the thing that I found interesting about it is just that this happened at night. And I have heard of people talking about what some would call astral travel. I tend to call them astral dreams, which is basically a dream of leaving your body. And I think that more often than not, that's probably what it is, simply because I've had a lot of astral dreams. But I don't think that I've had experiences leaving my body, or if I did, it was, you know, one of the rare and in-between kind of experiences. I wouldn't even know how to tell in that case. And it certainly felt very dreamlike, albeit, being a dream of leaving my body. You know what I'm saying? So I consider those astral dreams, even if they are of a vibrational sensation kind of a nature that is common in near-death experiences, as well as lucid dreams and other kinds of such experiences that are kind of the in-between stage like that. I think, and I can only speculate on this, I don't know, but I suspect that deep down our subconscious spirit, as it were, remembers the sensations of being a spirit, maybe even a spirit in a physical world such as this, or, you know, kinds of sensations that, you know, we experience, such as flying, for example. You know, it's very clear to me that spirits, if they choose, can fly. And that's probably something that was very familiar with us, or to us, before we came here. But when we came and we, you know, grow up in this very gravitationally bound body, we can't fly, and yet we dream of flying. Why would that be? Why is it that we don't dream of being, I don't know, why don't we all have dreams of having, you know, tremendous strength and lifting mountains, you know, like superheroes do. You know, flying, we think, well, it's because of Superman. Well, why don't we have a lot of dreams of having laser eyes? Now, most of us who are sci-fi interested, we've had occasional dreams of those kinds of things. I think I dreamt of being Anakin Skywalker. No, I was full-on Darth Vader in the dream and wanting to leave the Emperor and start a rehabilitation. And I remember having the Force, though I vaguely remember being disappointed at how pathetic my use of the Force was. Anyway, my point is that why don't we have, if this is just because we're familiar with this idea in superhero literature or from seeing birds flying or whatever, why don't we have more of that? Why don't we have more dreams of capturing prey, so to speak, and eating them with our talons? That's just as common as flying, albeit not as interesting. Why don't we have as many dreams of swimming like fish? You may have had occasional dreams like that, but how many exactly can you remember? Now, how many dreams can you remember flying? Why would we remember that? Why would we experience that? Especially so often as we do in dreams. At least I do. I think probably a month doesn't go by where I don't have at least one flying dream. Why is that? Unless it is because I am familiar with flying. I don't dream of burrowing in the earth very often, though that's something that superheroes and bugs and many other creatures can do. We have rabbits and they're digging all the time. Why don't I dream of digging into the ground? Now, I'll probably have a dream about that just because. And maybe it's because we don't aspire to it. But I've also aspired to flying through space, and all my dreams of flying, that hasn't happened. I look up and I see the stars and I fly toward them, but I'm always earthbound in those dreams. Why? Why? Unless there's something of familiarity about it. Now, I wouldn't give that as solid evidence of, you know, afterlife and all that kind of stuff, but I would just give it as something to think about. It seems to me that the things that we experienced in the spirit world for eons, infinity or eternity, if they are deeply in the subconscious of our spirits, that they probably show up in dreams quite often. And what other things often happen in dreams that don't happen in mortal life? Well, what about the sense of things happening? You know, I can't tell you a dream where I didn't know something that I didn't see, hear, smell, taste, or touch. I mean, it's like you just know there's somebody upstairs that's dangerous, or you know that there's a car that's about to turn the corner, and then it happens. Of course, there is, you know, expectation and so forth that, you know, science says, well, that's because our brains, you know, you think of a thing, and then it happens because you expect it. That's very possible. But it's also possible that our spirits have the ability to recognize when something's about to happen, or when someone walks into the room, even though you haven't turned and looked to see who it is, you know who it is, and so forth. Our spirits just have that sense about them. So if something happens in a dream, somebody walks in the room, and before you even turn and look, you know who it is, could it be that our subconscious just forgot to leave out the fact that, you know, in the mortal body, you don't experience that? And so when you wake up, you're like, how did I know? How did I know as the individual? And we always conclude, well, it was my dream. My brain knew who it was going to place in front of me, so that's why. Well, that's possible. That's very possible. It's also possible that that is something that your spirit is very familiar with doing. And I wouldn't suggest from that that things that you see in dreams are all memories of spirit experiences. I don't think that's the case. I think your brain is taking memories of daily life, of shows you've watched, of books you're reading, of something you saw on the news, or just something odd that you saw on a sign somewhere or whatever. It's taking all these different things and it is creating a dream out of it. But in the midst of that, the small inner workings of the day-to-day life of a dream often spilling abilities that we describe as having in the spirit world. And I wonder sometimes if that is because subconsciously we remember flying. We remember having a sense of people's emotions and feelings. We remember having really intense emotions. We remember deep down having a sense when something is happening, even when our five senses have no concept of it just yet. I don't know. That's just a thought. I would not, again, give this as evidence or proof or anything like that of an afterlife or the spirit world or anything. It's just something to think about. And it makes you think about what other things, either in dreams or in waking life or in our subconscious minds, what other things are reflections or shadows of what we once experienced and once knew very well and will once again experience after we die for eons, eternities. Anyway, kind of interesting. So anyway, if you would like to contact the podcast, you can either email neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com or by calling 970-NDE-CAST to leave a short 3-minute message. If you need more time, call right back. We can piece together as many calls as you make into the put them on the podcast. Also, if you don't want your name included in your when we read your email on the podcast, just say so in the email and I will leave it out, or if you want to be anonymous, whatever. Also, if you would like to support the podcast, you can do so by either purchasing my book, Life in the Spirit World, or by going to patreon.com/ndecast and becoming an ongoing monthly contributor. And with that, thank you, you guys. Thank you so much for listening.